Time now for Michigan's number one outdoor radio show, Mike Avery's Outdoor Magazine. Outdoor Magazine is brought to you by Jay's Sporting Goods, the Yeider Insurance Group, Forward Corporation and T.R. McTaggart, Angler Quest Boats, Security Credit Union, Garber Chevrolet, and by Michigan Brand Meats. Now, here's Mike Avery.
Indeed, this is the big guy, Mike Avery, and welcome to our number two of this week's Outdoor Magazine show right here on the Outdoor Magazine Radio Network, 29 AM and FM stations across the great state of Michigan, talking about the history and tradition of this wonderful outdoor lifestyle that we are so blessed with here in Michigan. And we occasionally talk about topics beyond our state lines, but this is a Michigan show. It is a Michigan-based outdoor radio show. It is produced, recorded, scheduled. I mean, it's a radio show. And if you can, I would encourage you to listen to it on your local AM or FM station. All 3 hours of the show, in fact. If you can't, if your local affiliate doesn't carry all 3 hours of the show, or if you live in some part of our state not covered by the broadcast signal, you can always listen to the podcast version of the show. Podcasting is a big, big thing these days, and I think podcasting is wonderful. I've been doing podcasting for a long time. In fact, I do some shows that are strictly podcasts, like the Jays podcast, the Angler Quest podcast, the Offshore podcast, the Killer Food Plots podcast, and several more. But the radio show, Outdoor Magazine Radio, is also made available as a podcast. And you can hear that, well, let's see, many, many places. I would send you to the website, MikeAveryOutdoors.com. MikeAveryOutdoors.com, the online source for all things Outdoor Magazine Radio and Mike Avery Outdoors. I also put the podcast on the Facebook page, Mike Avery Outdoors on Facebook. It's on Avery Outdoors on Twitter. I put it up on my LinkedIn page. It's on iTunes. It's on Google Play, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Radio.com, and several other places that I wasn't even aware of. Suffice to say, anywhere that you get your podcasts, you can probably hear the podcast version of the Outdoor Magazine radio show. But again, regardless of whether you're listening to the podcast or the broadcast version of the show, I thank you very, very much. I love our state. If you've heard the show before, you know I am an unabashed fanboy for Michigan. I grew up here. I love our natural resources. I love what our state has to offer as far as fish and wild game. Because when you look at our state, like if you go to the far western UP and you go down to the southeast corner of the lower, it's like geographically and demographically two different worlds. But both of those areas and everything in between offers outstanding outdoor opportunities. I'm thinking right now of Lake St. Clair and the muskie fishery on Lake St. Clair. You know, Minnesota. You talk about Minnesota being a big muskie fishery. Well, over in Minnesota, they call muskies the fish of 10,000 casts, meaning you're going to spend a lot of time on the water and burn out your shoulder and your forearm casting for fish before you catch one. Well, you want to try something a little easier? And in my opinion, I got to be honest, more fun. Go to Lake St. Clair and troll for those fish where you're going to have multiple fish days. Don Miller is a guy who has been fishing Lake St. Clair for years. He was trained by the master himself, Homer LeBlanc. In fact, Don took me one of my first trips down there into Homer's basement. It was like a shrine, a muskie fishing shrine. And Don's with us now on the Outdoor Magazine phone line. Don, welcome. How have you been?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing just great. How's the fishing been?
The fishing's been good. This is my 40th year. I hate to date myself back, but this is 40 years now. So I've been around the world on Lake St. Clair a few times at about five miles an hour. So
Well, Don, if this is your 40th year, you must have started when you were 10 years old then, right?
Right.
Yeah. There we go.
Don't tell everybody.
Yeah.
I forgot a lot of things way back when, but it comes back every once in a while. So
40 years. Wow.
The fishing has been good. Of course, I'm under the understanding that the Canada border is closed, which is okay because the lake levels are even higher than last year. And I think that just puts more into the Michigan's venue to do more fishing in Michigan because, of course, a lot of guys like going over across the border because there are weeds coming up on the Michigan side. But just on the opposite side of the coin is that the more weeds you have, the more predators you have. And with the water a little higher, it's going to give you more time to fish in Michigan without having to worry about a lot of weed blow around the area and get into areas like New Baltimore, Salt River, North Channel area, Strawberry Island, Black Creek, the Spillway, Grosse Pointe Yacht Club area, and over by the Delphine and off the dumping grounds, of course. So all those areas hold a lot of big fish.
Don, you talk about weeds. I hate weeds. They make it so hard to troll for fish. But, man, when on the other side, on the flip side, fish love to hide in weeds.
They do. They do. You can't have a weedless lake without having fish. I mean, you know, the determining factors. You're always going to want to fish into the wind because that's the – if you get into the wind and up on the lee shore – which is the shore that the wind is blowing from a little bit, you're going to have less debris on your fishing lines and a cleaner presentation to pick up your fish. So, I mean, you have to figure it out a little bit, but you don't want to be downwind, sitting downwind of a sort of somewhat windy day. I won't get out there if it's a windstorm, but, you know, 5 to 15 miles an hour, you don't want to be on the downwind side. You want to get upwind into it a little bit if you can. Set yourself up.
Don, how has that musky fishery there on Lake St. Clair, how has it changed? How has it evolved from when you first started?
When I first started, if you would have seen maybe, if you have gotten a strike in a day, it was a good day, whether you boated a fish or not. And if you would have seen 60 to maybe 80 fish in a season, and you worked hard for that, and one fish being 25 to 30 pounds that you got to the boat, you would have really been like King Kong, you know? But today, I mean, I think we posted numbers last year of upwards of better than 350, and I think around 24 or 25 of those fish were 45 inches or better. And one of them was a little over 40 pounds, 53 inches. And about 41 pounds. I'm not saying we lost some heartbreakers, you know, and had them on for a while and they got off and beat us. But ironically, you'll always remember the ones that beat you more than the ones you caught. But
Yeah.
You know, that's what keeps you coming back, you know.
And you never lose a small fish. It's always a big fish.
That's the truth.
By the time you tell the story, that's the truth at least, right?
Right. Right, and you always remember the ones that stole your favorite bait too. So,
isn't that funny?
It's
especially with muskies. I bet it's in some ways it's like deer hunting. As you know, you get a special fish, you're going to remember that story of catching that fish or losing that fish, just like you might a big buck.
You do. I could tell stories all day long on losing a fish or getting a fish, you know. But you keep going back and saying, you know, If I had this to do again, I would do it differently, maybe a little bit. But, you know, when you mark little spots on your GPS when you're driving around, and the public may not know what you're doing, but, you know, what you're doing basically for street terms, what you're going to call, you've got a little icon on your bird's eye view of your lake map with your navionics unit, and I'm staging a drive-by shooting because they're territorial. They'll range an area of a couple of miles unless something unnatural forces them out. And when you got a little icon where you've had an encounter with a big brute, you like to go by and with your lines cleaned up and a clean presentation to go through that area and see if you can't trigger something again to see, try to create something to happen for your people on the boat. So I try to premeditate things a little bit.
You say that you think a big muskie will have a couple of mile range? That's impressive.
Yeah, they'll stick around. They're not going to, unless they're really forced out of their area, they're not going to go 20 miles or 15 miles from one spot of the lake to another. They're going to stay in an area where pretty much where they're born, like a deer would. And, you know, I mean, the truth of the pudding is, I mean, I don't have names for fish. I'm not that eccentric. But I've actually boated some fish with weird characteristics on them that I noted in my diary and logbooks, to where you would see part of the face was cut off where somebody used a knife. And, you know, it would be like July 2nd, 1999. And you would say, well, I picked her up in this one spot, and you've got it noted, and you've got last year's diary on the book with you, of course, and then this year's new diary going by recording your latitude and longitude where you pick up strikes. And coincidentally, you pick up a big strike, and you see the same fish again, probably within a couple hundred yards of where you picked her up a year
ago.
Wow. You know? So, I mean, that's happened to me too many times to count. We're not talking thousands, but several, I'd say a couple hundred real notable times that I could say over my career to where I've seen something like that.
Wow.
To where I'm convinced that the fish are absolutely territorial. And
Don, hang tight.
I'm led to believe.
Hang tight. We've got to take a break here. We're talking with Don Miller of Motor City Muskies, the website millers-sportfishing.com, millers-sportfishing.com. He is a master at trolling for giant muskies on Lake St. Clair. The guy's been doing it for 40 years now. How impressive is that? Millers-sportfishing.com. Take a break. Lots more coming up right here on Outdoor Magazine. By now, you know all about AnglerQuest boats. The center console design, binary wall system, and smooth ride with lots of room have anglers convinced a pontoon can be a great fishing rig. And the folks at Michigan-based AnglerQuest continue to make their boats even better. Now the signature rocket launcher arch can tilt down. That's great for high water levels, trailering, and storage. Also, there's a new panfish model that's perfect for smaller inland lakes. The popular Pro Troll models continue to dominate big water for walleye, salmon, and trout, and the family fish can keep everyone happy whether fishing or cruising. All AnglerQuest boats are designed by fishermen and made in Michigan by skilled craftsmen using the latest technology. You can learn more online at AnglerQuestPontoons.com. That's AnglerQuestPontoons.com. With more models, upgraded designs, plenty of features, and bigger outboards, this is the perfect year for you to join the AnglerQuest family.
At Garber Chevrolet in Midland, Saginaw, Linwood, and Caro, we're better for a reason. Like Garber's low price guarantee. Get incredible everyday low prices on a new Chevy Equinox, Silverado, Traverse, or Trax. Think you found a better deal somewhere else? Bring it to us, and we will beat it. Getting more options and choices is always better. That's the benefit of having the Great Lakes Bay Region's largest inventory of new Chevrolets. When you shop Garber Chevrolet, you won't have to shop around to find exactly what you're looking for. And Garber Chevrolet's award-winning customer service is in a class of its own. Your needs will always come first. Better prices, better selection, and better service. There's a reason why you'll do better at Garber Chevrolet in Midland, Saginaw, Linwood, and Caro. Home of the low price guarantee. Chevy, find new roads and find a better deal online at GarberChevrolet.com. You'll do better at
Garber. Everybody needs to put gas in their tank, so the next time, why not save money with fuel rewards from Forward Shell convenience stores? With fuel rewards, you'll save at least 5 cents a gallon on every fill-up at the 26 Forward Shell convenience stores. Plus, you can earn additional savings with select products and special offers at those Forward stores. You can save 20, 30, even 40 cents a gallon. And the more you use fuel rewards, the more you can save. I use the fuel rewards program every time I stop by a Forward Shell convenience store. And you can, too. Go to FuelRewards.com. That's FuelRewards.com. You can also download the Fuel Rewards app on your phone. The Fuel Rewards program at your local Forward Shell convenience store. A great way to save money every time you fill up. To learn more, check out ForwardConvenience.com. That's ForwardConvenience.com.
If you like to troll, you need Offshore Tackle. For walleye, salmon, trout, muskies, and even crappies, Offshore has something to make your time on the water more fun and productive. New this year, the heavy-duty Tattle Flag Wire, and don't forget about the popular crankbait tuning tool to get the best depth and action. Offshore's lineup of inline planers will take your baits out to the side and into the fish-catching zone. Check out the OR38 mini boards for a stealthy presentation, or the time-tested OR12s to pull just about any lure configuration. And for the big jobs, the OR37 SST Pro mag boards are what you need. Offshore can help you get your baits down to the fish too. The resettable tadpole diving planers come in four sizes for any bait and any depth. And be sure to look at the time-tested pro weights for precise depth control. For more info on any Offshore product, check out the website offshoretackle.com. That's offshoretackle.com. It's been true for years, and even more so today. Offshore Tackle is your leader in trolling technology.
You can hear the Outdoor Magazine show in Taos on WIOS, 1480 AM, 106.9 FM. You can hear us in Muskegon on WKBZ, that's 1090 AM, and north of the bridge in Newberry, WNBY, 1450 AM. This segment of Outdoor Magazine is brought to you by MUCC's On the Ground program. OTG is a program to improve habitat for fish and wildlife across the state. For details, check out the Michigan United Conservation Club's website, MUCC.org. That's MUCC.org. Also, a reminder, while you are on that website, you can save 25% on your MUCC membership by using the promo code MIKE, all caps, M-I-K-E, and save 25% on your MUCC membership at MUCC.org. Right now, we're talking with a longtime Lake St. Clair muskie captain. His name is Don Miller. The website is millers-sportfishing.com, millers-sportfishing.com, Motor City Muskies. Don, let's talk a little bit about the specifics of how you are targeting these fish. Number one, you're trolling, but you're trolling pretty fast.
Yeah, speeds we're covering right now or this time of year, right around 4 miles an hour, but as the summer progresses, we'll speed up to around 6 miles an hour trolling a bait behind our boat as the metabolism increases. The lakes are higher right now, Mike, so it's going to take a little more time for the lake to warm up to where their peak metabolism is at. So I like to look for the transitional color lines out in the lake that occur maybe out in front of the mouths of a creek or a river, and try to key in on a slight temperature change and slow down a little bit to around 4 miles an hour and let them feel the bait a little bit more rather than chase after it like they like to sometimes. They'll move to get it, but their peak metabolism is 67 to about 70 degrees when the lake hits that climate. Right now, it's right around 63, 62, so it's going to take a little time for it to get up there, you know. Fishing's been good.
Do you run baits with rattles in them, or do you let just the hooks banging against the body? Is that enough noise?
I have some baits with rattles in it, and I'm a little out to school on it. I really don't think there's any difference. If we're going to troll with a bait, the wooden ones work just as good as the plastic ones. The rattles, I don't think, are any different in my findings anyway. Some guys might say different, but I mean, I'm not going to argue with the other guys because they got success with them. Certainly, if the program you got is working, don't go fixing it, you know. But mine's been working good for 40 years, and I'm not going to say that it needs any repair at this point. I'm having pretty good success.
Yeah. At this point, there's no sense changing things dramatically, that's for sure.
Bucktails seem to be pretty good. I'll give the credit to the double-bladed bucktail thing. Those things, they can do some damage. They're very good lures. I didn't use them for years. The Eppinger people, the spoons, they got some good stuff out there too. I'm not against adverse to spoons. So it's all in the action of the color and what they like. Some days they like a wobble, some days they like a twirl, some days they like a wiggle. I mean, you're not going to argue with them. Whatever they want, put it out there and put your best foot forward, because if it's in the water and it's moving the right speed, some muskie is probably going to find it out there in that place.
But big baits, I mean, if you're fishing big fish, you're fishing big baits, usually.
Usually you are, yes. I mean, I like any size between 6 to 8 inches for my baits. Some guys like them bigger. I got to tell you that some of the biggest fish I've seen in my career came on an 8-inch jointed believer, or a 6-inch Loki or Wiley or something like that. I mean, I don't see the need to really go much more bigger than 8 inches. Some guys in certain parts of the country, I know over in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Minnesota, and Illinois, in that area. In New York, they like to use the big 10, 12-inch. Up in Green Bay, those guys are throwing out broomsticks painted up with hooks hanging off of them. They're 12, 14 inches long and casting them. And so I've seen all kinds of things go on. But for Lake St. Clair, I think if you're going to troll, I think that I'd be fairly comfortable with anything between 6 to 8 inches that doesn't plane out or skip behind the boat, and you're pulling it back there effectively with a clean presentation. Some muskie probably somewhere in that lake's going to find it and hop on.
Well, no disrespect to our friends in Minnesota, but doggone it, if I'm going to listen to somebody on how to catch muskies, it's going to be you guys on Lake St. Clair.
I think there's a lot of substance in that speaks in volumes. Years ago, when I first started, if you would have seen 65 to 80 muskies a season, and one of them being 25 to 30 pounds, you would have really thought you were something great. But today, it's not uncommon, because of the catch and release ethics, to see upwards in the numbers of 300 to 500 a season being caught. And many of those fish are 25 to 40 pounds in that mix. I mean, it's a good mixed bag. Not every musk you see is going to be a big one, but just the same note, too, if it were all big, you'd think something was wrong with the lake.
Sure.
So you got a good mixed bag going on that tells you reproduction has taken place. And arguably, I think you could state right now that if you were to talk about a world-class fishery for muskie, I think you have to bring Lake St. Clair into the conversation. It's on the threshold, you know?
Is it all catch and release on your boat and even there on the lake? Can you keep a muskie on Lake St. Clair if you want to?
You can keep them. It's legal. It's legal to keep them. But the guys that are purists that are fishing them out there, the boats are set up for it, they're not keeping any fish that I know of. I haven't heard of anybody maliciously going out there and taking a fish home just to show it off. The graphite reproduction thing done by some of the guys that are out there doing it, Rick Lax in Wisconsin does a great job, and I plug him on my website. Those guys, there's no need to kill a big fish like that, because they're putting over 100,000 eggs back into the system when they reproduce, and it's all about genetics, the same thing as white-tailed deer. When you get a good strain of white-tailed deer in an area with a nice monster buck, you know he's putting good things in the offspring. And the same thing with those big females. They're putting good things back in that lake. But the biology department tells me that 0.1% of that 100,000 eggs lives to make it. So you're talking about roughly 100 muskies make it to adult life out of 100,000.
Wow. How do you handle those big fish? When you get them to the boat, I mean, I know you're very careful. I know you want to make sure you can release them alive. So is there a preferred way to fight them, to bring them in, and then to handle and release them? What's the secret there, Don?
A lot of guys in the smaller boats are using cradle nets to bring them in and take the hooks out, and then they take the measurements and girth while they're down the net and still in their own environment rather than take them out. And then maybe they'll lift them up with one big picture and then put it back in the lake right away if they don't have the means to support a live well on the boat. Where I have a live well on my boat, it's a 60-inch live well, and I can put a couple of bigger fish in there if necessary. Sometimes you get doubles. And what I'll do is I'll put them in there in their own environment and let them get back to their own caliber of being upright, and then release them back in the lake after a picture gets taken. So
a 60-inch live well, that's pretty big.
Yeah, it's a freshwater pickup off the lake, and it keeps the freshwater pumping over their gills and their head, coming in there, and sometimes we use ice on them to cool them off in there a little bit, because they get hot like an Olympic runner would in a race. They're fighting for their life out there. When they come to the boat, they don't know. You just want to have your picture taken with it and then release it back in the lake. But the smaller boats that don't have my size, the nets over the side of the boat, the cradle nets, work very effectively.
How does a big muskie fight? Are they going to fight like a king salmon?
I think a king is comparably, I'm partial, but I'm going to say a muskie is like a king on steroids. You know? So, I'm going to say that they can start with 5 feet of line behind the boat on you, and in a matter of a minute or two, have you back to where they're back a couple hundred yards on you, and just about taking you to the spool. And I've seen some kings do some pretty dastardly stuff too to anglers on the lake. I mean, they've cut all the lines out of the back of the boat and spooled them out. So I was, they're comparatively about the same, I would say, in the same league.
And when you talk about a bait 5 feet from the boat, that's a common tactic, that down rod right there in the prop wash. Those big muskies will come right in and feed and hit a bait right at your boat.
Right at the back of the boat. I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, if you were to stage a bait back there and all that propulsion going on, is that people don't realize that muskies are curious and will come off the back of the boat, because they don't have any natural enemies. I mean, I've asked a lot of people, what natural enemy does a muskie have? And people will tell me, man. And I'll say, well, unless you sleep under the water at night and you have gill plates, you're not a natural enemy. So they're really the top-of-the-line freshwater predator. And off the back of the boat, that gurgitation of bubbles back there, I think, simulates a school of bait fish running away from them. And they'll frolic around in there looking for something. If you've got something staged in there and 5 feet off the back of the boat, I usually set the rods down in there with about 5 feet of line off the back with a 20-ounce ball hanging on an inline sinker in there with about a 5 or 6 foot leader. And the lead ball is even with the back of the boat. And when they hit that, you don't need to worry about that heavy weight, because they'll yank that thing around like it's nothing.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
So, I mean, a lot of guys just can't imagine that, you know, but when you get a good rascal in there that's 30 to 40 pounds, that 20-ounce weight is nothing. Just believe me, they'll take that. They'll throw that around like a shot putter, you know?
I know you got a late start on the season, Don. Do you have any openings for people yet this summer?
There's good openings this summer available. July offers a lot of opportunities still, in late July, and through August is all good. September even too.
Oh, so later in the summer is actually maybe even a little bit better for you.
Sure. It's good fishing in summer, late summer.
Hmm.
Late summer, early fall. A lot of people don't realize that the fall feed starts on muskies when the change of daylight occurs. When you get down to the daylight hours of what's going on, is that their feeding activity is triggered by the amount of daylight. And while the feed bag is still good out in the middle of that lake and it's good fishing, it's getting dark at 7:30 at night. It's not getting dark at 10 o'clock at night anymore like it is in the third week of June.
Well, Don, good fishing to you. I got to take a break, Don. Good fishing to you. I'll send people to your website, millers-sportfishing.com, to book a trip for Monster Lake St. Clair Muskies with one of the best out there, Captain Don Miller, at Motor City Muskies, millers-sportfishing.com. Thank you, Don. We'll take a break when we come back. Brad Dupuy of Angler Quest Boats right here on Outdoor Magazine. You can hear the Outdoor Magazine show in Caro on WKYO 1360 AM. You can hear us in Sheboygan on Big Country Gold, WCBY AM and FM. That's 1240 AM, 100.7 FM. And you can hear us in Manistee on WMLQ 97.7 FM. The segment of Outdoor Magazine brought to you by Boning Archery, Michigan-based Boning, been a leader in the archery industry. Oh, since what, the mid-40s? Coming up next year is the 75th anniversary of Boning. Michigan-based company, Been making great archery accessories for so many years. I like to say they make everything for bows and arrows except bows and arrows, and they do a wonderful, wonderful job. Check them out online at boning.com, B-O-H-N-I-N-G, boning.com. While you are online, of course, I would encourage you to check out my website, MikeAveryOutdoors.com, and check out AnglerQuestPontoons.com, and Quest is Q-W-E-S-T, AnglerQuestPontoons.com. You know I'm a big fan of Michigan-made Angler Quest boats. Been running one for several years here now. And the guy behind Angler Quest is Brad Dupuis, and he's with us now on the Outdoor Magazine phone line. Brad, welcome back. How you doing?
Hey, we're doing great, Mike. It's fishing season. The walleye bite's strong, and I'm happy to be on the show.
Always a pleasure to have you along with us, my friend. And now, listen, I know, like everybody else, you guys got hit hard by the COVID situation. Are you back up and running? Are you making boats now?
Yes, we've been making boats since we were legally able to manufacture in mid-May. It definitely set us back. We had a lot of sold boats that were virtually all sold boats, retail sold boats that were on schedule. We're on those now, completing them daily as we speak, and things are going strong. Things are actually very strong out there in the marine industry, and it's really, really nice to see after such an event as COVID.
Well, excellent to see, and I see it all the time. Like my home water of Saginaw Bay, Brad, I can't go out there these days without seeing another, maybe several other Angler Quests out there.
Yeah, that is exciting, isn't it? And, you know, it's really happening for us, too, on Angler Quest. We're really starting to see, nationwide, we're starting to see some really cool stuff. We got a great dealer in Oklahoma that just put in a beautiful 10-boat order. We got a really good guy down in South Carolina, a new dealer that just signed up yesterday. We've got a lot of things happening nationally, and it's really exciting to see. And of course, out on the bay, it's always awesome to see all the Angler Quests out there, and that's a pretty cool thing.
And all of this started right here in St. Louis, Michigan, when you and your brother Mark got together and just started kicking around this idea.
Yeah, you know, Mark really encouraged me to come up with a design that would be a design how I would want to fish it out on Saginaw Bay and in the trolling environment that we have on the Great Lakes. And, of course, you know, a pontoon boat, the thought was, boy, is that going to work? It's a pontoon boat, big water. But, boy, it has really come full circle. And with the help of everybody here within the shop, our engineering department, it's really, really come full circle. And, you know, it's a great product, and we're really starting to see a lot of sales. And it's very exciting, Mike.
How much has the design changed? I'm not even talking about 2021, but the 2020 models, how similar or different are they from that very first prototype I saw sitting on the grass there in Freeland about 7 years ago?
Oh, boy, it has changed substantially. That very first boat that you saw was one of our pleasure boat helms that we located right in the center of the boat and kind of fabricated something out of nothing, per se. Nowadays, you know, heck, we've got the big center console updated helm that will fit electronics up to a 12-inch screen in all the different electronics brands. You know, the binary wall system's been tweaked, and we've done some things to help the manufacturability of that. You know, we're continually making improvements and tweaks. You know, heck, the TrackStack tower, which is synonymous with the Pro Troll, is now a standard tilt down option. Geez, with all this high water, to be able to get under bridges and things of that nature are so critical, not only here in the Great Lakes, but throughout the U.S. High water is prevalent, that's for sure.
Any big changes coming up for these 2021 models, which will be unveiled here in about a month or so?
No, not really. The 2021 product, you know, we really got set back by the COVID crisis. You know, we had 6 weeks of downtime where we were not really working on that from an engineering standpoint. Once again, we're going to have some tweaks. We're going to have some really cool things that we're offering. But the base design is essentially going to be the same, Mike. We're looking to just carry the momentum forward with what we have. And there'll be some bits and pieces that'll be cool changes. And I think a lot of people will look at them as substantial, but I myself just look at it as a tweak. So for the most part, Mike, we're really running with what we got and are going to keep the ball rolling.
Well, you get to a point, I mean, you know, those first few years, yeah, you're going to make some fairly major changes, but the boat gets to a point, which is where I feel AnglerQuest is now. You get to a point where it's darn near the perfect fishing boat, and any changes you can make are going to be probably minor after that.
Yeah, you are correct. Absolutely. We've made a lot of changes to risers and tubes and a lot of different things, and we're very comfortable with where the design is. And, you know, it gets to a certain point, too, where you want to just keep running with what you got to keep the ball rolling. Once you change and start doing different things, it really holds things up a little bit, and it
sure
equates to a lot of work, you know. So yeah, we're going to keep the ball rolling, Mike.
Well, and congrats on that, Brad. You have a wonderful boat. I am a big fan of AnglerQuest. The fact that they're made in Michigan, I love. But once you spend time on the water, you are absolutely sold. Get out on an AnglerQuest, and you will know what I mean. Check them out online at AnglerQuestPontoons.com, AnglerQuestPontoons.com. Thank you, Brad Dupuy. We'll take a break. This week's Ask Avery segment coming up after the break, right here on Outdoor Magazine.
We spend a lot of time thinking about our next outdoor adventure, where we're heading, and what we're going to do. But I bet most of us don't spend much time thinking about our financial institution. At Security Credit Union, they love to work with sportsmen and women. Hunters, anglers, shooters, trappers, Security Credit Union has a program for you. With 11 branches in 10 counties, plus online banking from anywhere, Security Credit Union could be your perfect financial partner. They offer financing for RVs, ATVs, cabins, hunting property, and just about anything else you need for your next outdoor adventure. And to make it even better, you can apply online. Check them out at securitycu.org. That's securitycu.org to learn how Security Credit Union can work for you. Again, check out securitycu.org. That's securitycu.org. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Have you tried the Mike Avery Hunter Sticks from Michigan Brand Meats? They feature two of my favorites, elk and pepper, and I think they taste great. I've been working with the Grillo family of Michigan Brand for a few years now, and I couldn't be happier. Michigan Brand is family-owned and based right here in Michigan, and they make lots of great products. From jerky, sausage, and those Hunter Sticks, to their famous Michigan Brand hams, you can't go wrong with Michigan Brand meats. Plus, Michigan Brand can process your boned-out wild game, too. Check out the website, MichiganBrand.net, for more info. That's MichiganBrand.net. You can buy the Mike Avery Hunter Sticks on that website. Plus, you can get them at Jay's Sporting Goods, all Forward convenience stores, Jack's Fruit Markets, and many other great stores, too. There's a complete list on the website. Again, that's MichiganBrand.net for the Mike Avery Hunter Sticks, the outstanding Michigan Brand hams, and lots more. MichiganBrand.net.
Most of us have heard the expression going up north all of our lives. It's just three little words, but it stirs a thousand different memories. Hunting, fishing, boating, camping, canoeing, hiking, spending time with family. When you're up north, you only go indoors to sleep or if it's raining, with one big exception. Because when you head up north, you're sure to spend a little time inside Jay's Sporting Goods. Whether you stop in at Jay's in Clare or Gaylord, you'll find a huge store, a place to get all the gear you need to make the most of whatever you love about being up north. Plus a team of professionals who know the products, the country you're headed into, and the importance of preserving and passing on those great outdoor traditions. Jay's Sporting Goods, exit 160 in Clare, then 1 mile north, and the huge new Jay's in Gaylord on South Otsego Avenue.
The gear, the knowledge, the tradition of Jay's.
Hey, you like to hunt for different game in changing conditions, but it can be expensive to buy hunting clothes in every pattern. Well, now there's a way to change your camo without breaking the bank. With VersaSkins, you can buy one set of hunting clothes and change the pattern to suit your surroundings. You can switch from whitetail to waterfowl, blaze orange, and snow camo by just snapping on a new skin. Plus, VersaSkins keep you warm, dry, and protect you from the elements. To learn more, check out the website VersaSkins.com. VersaSkins, just change the skin for the season you're in.
When you buy a Michigan hunting or fishing license, you're helping to fund conservation efforts across the state. The majority of funding for taking care of Michigan's fish and wildlife comes from you, hunters and anglers, not state taxes. So on behalf of the Michigan Wildlife Council, we'd like to thank you for your part in ensuring that Michigan's hunting and fishing heritage will be here for generations. Learn how the Michigan Wildlife Council promotes the role of hunting and fishing at hereformioutdoors.org.
You can hear the Outdoor Magazine show in Sandusky on WMIC at 6:60 a.m. You can hear us in Mount Pleasant on WMMI, 8:30 a.m., 92.3 FM. And you can hear us in Flint on Super Talk 1570 WWCK. This week's Ask Avery segment is brought to you by Security Credit Union. Security Credit Union loves to work with outdoorsmen and women, and they can help you with your next outdoor adventure. Check them out online at securitycu.org. That's securitycu.org. And this week's question is from Gary Nert. And normally these questions are emailed into me, mike@mikeaveryoutdoors.com, or you can hit me up on the social media platforms. Gary was actually at my house to give us a bid on a permanent fence to keep the geese out of the backyard, a permanent goose barrier. And he said, "Hey, Mike, I've been seeing more dead deer than normal on the sides of the roads these days, and I'm wondering why." And this is Gary. He says, "Is it somehow related to COVID and people's changed travel patterns?" And actually, Gary, I've had a lot of people say the same thing, including Pat Johnston, who is here in the studio with me right now. He says, "Yeah, we are seeing more dead deer along the road." Well, I don't have an answer for this because I'm not an expert. However, Chad Stewart is the deer specialist for the Michigan DNR, and he has graciously agreed to address this question. Chad, welcome back. How are you?
Great, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, always a pleasure. So, first of all, have you been hearing this or seeing this from anybody that there's a unusually large number of dead deer on the roadways this year?
Actually, no. And I think when we were texting a little bit yesterday, it was kind of surprising because, if anything, I would predict that the number of deer vehicle collisions would actually go down a little bit over the past couple months compared to last year at this time, given people are generally reducing their activities and movements because of the current situation that we're in.
Yeah, that's what I would have been thinking as well. Now, don't we normally, though, see more car deer accidents at two times of the year, in the fall during the rut and in the springtime during the fawning season?
Yes. So, you know, when you look at October, November, December, basically 40% plus of the deer vehicle collisions that occur across the entire year occur in that three-month period. And you know, you're about at 50% if you want to throw in January as well. Now, there is a spike that you tend to see in like late May, early June with deer vehicle collisions as well. So, you know, when you break it down by month, June is usually about the fifth highest month in terms of overall deer vehicle collisions. And that's generally believed to be because they're spread out a lot more on the landscape, mostly associated with fawning behavior. But you've in areas where you've got a lot of people and a lot of deer, you know, specifically in southern Michigan, the green up occurs, deer are spread out a lot more, they're moving around a lot more to separate themselves, and that's going to translate into a slight bump up in deer vehicle collisions at that time.
Now, anybody who hits a deer, obviously, it becomes a big problem. But overall, statewide, statistically, I mean, is the number of deer killed in car deer accidents big enough where you guys have to figure this into your equations at all? How do you guys look at it?
Yeah, so we view deer vehicle collisions really as like what we call a secondary indicator. So, you know, the first thing that we primarily look at in terms of how the deer herd is doing is we look at hunter harvest and success rates and things like that, things that we have a lot more control over. Deer vehicle collisions, we know, are reported variably across the state. So we cannot rely on them completely. But as a state in general, we do look at those numbers. We do take those into account. We just don't put as much emphasis on it when determining trends. And you know, looking at the data that we have available to us from 2018, we know that there are at least 50,000 reported deer vehicle collisions that occur in the state of Michigan. So it's not insignificant. It's something that we obviously are aware of, and we obviously respond to and incorporate in our estimates in terms of how we respond or make recommendations for deer management.
Well, Chad, listen, I appreciate you addressing this. I'm not sure we've really answered Gary's question, but we have gotten some information out there about car deer accidents and all that stuff. So I appreciate your time, Chad. Michigan.gov/DNR is the website, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Following up on this, actually, Mark Torregrossa, Michigan's meteorologist from MLive, said the same thing to me. He said, you know, he's driving back from Traverse City. He said, I'm seeing so many dead deer along the road. And Mark, being the scientific type that he is, he said, Avery, why is there not an app to address this? He said, you've got all these fresh deer kills along the road. Now, you wouldn't want to go out and get a deer that's been out there for 3 days in the summer heat, right? I get that. But you got a fresh road kill there. He says, why isn't there an app where when somebody hits a deer, they can report it on this app? And then anybody who's looking for fresh venison can go to this app and see if there was a reported fresh roadkill in their area, and they could sign up and get that. I said, Mark, that's not a bad idea. So if you're looking to somehow make some money or help people out, maybe if you're an app developer, you can come up with something like that. So listen, Gary Nerd, I appreciate your question about why so many dead deer. I don't think we gave you a good answer, but you're not the only one who is seeing this. Several people I've talked to are seeing the same thing. And again, thanks to our friends at Security Credit Union for making the Ask Avery segment possible. SecurityCU.org, SecurityCU.org. You can always send me an email to Mike@MikeAveryOutdoors.com. If you have a question for the Ask Avery segment, it can be something directly for me, or as I did this time, I will pass it along to somebody else. We'll take a break. When we come back, Dave Mull in hour number 3 of this week's Outdoor Magazine.